Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And welcome back to the show. This is Leading Edge Medicine Hour number 2. And the number to call with your questions, 1-800-465-8770. All right, doctors, we have a listener that was concerned, and this is very timely. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And she wanted to know, she says, oh, I am not going to do a mammogram because the squishing, if there are cancer cells, she was told, or she believed, that that could spread in her body and because of the radiation. And she was worried about, the ectomies that they do and biopsies. I'm sure those are not the right medical terms, but she's not.
Ectomies and opties.
Yeah, and as opti, you know, they're taking something out and they're and she's very fearful, but yet doesn't want to do. And this is why we have breast cancer awareness. So maybe we should talk a little bit about this today.
All right.
Yeah, sure. I mean, breast cancer is on the rise, and a lot of younger and younger women, unfortunately, are getting the diagnosis of breast cancer. And so it's scary for a lot of people. And there's a lot of information or misinformation out there. I'm a firm believer in screening. And unfortunately, though, when you talk about cancer of any kind, and here it is breast cancer, by the time we find the lesion, it has already been present in that body for a while, for many years.
3 to 5 years on average.
Yes.
Wow.
And
okay.
So, you know, an immediate diagnosis doesn't mean that this thing just happened. In fact, it's been lingering for years, hidden, unseen, unknown, and has been growing. And then it comes to the stage where it can now be diagnosed by mammographies, the typical thing that we do for women. In your case, Lynette, for your friend who, or for the question, listener who asked the question, where mammography is the gold standard right now, it is still a screen, but women that have a problem with mammograms and have risks can request some other types of investigations, particularly MRIs. And they can get clearance from insurance and they can actually do this. I know colleagues and friends and patients who have had it done because they're at high risk and mammography is not enough or painful or for whatever reason they can do it. Particularly women that have dense breast tissues because of high progesterone levels, they, small lesions cannot be seen easily because of the density of the breast tissue. So they do qualify for other testings. I have in the past, recently I've not been asked this, but in the past I've been asked, can I do a thermogram instead? And where women used to use thermograms, and maybe in expert hands they're good at it, but you do have to go regularly. It is not considered the gold standard though. And so it, you know, you have to be careful. If you're at high risk and you think there is a lesion there, I would say get the mammogram and or get an MRI scan. Yes, we recognize that mammograms on a regular basis do also increase risk for radiation exposure. There are other blood tests that you can do for screenings, but they do not replace your mammograms. But there are other things that you can do to reduce your risk for developing breast cancer in general. And a lot of things are very simple. First of all, optimize your weight. Make sure you exercise regularly. Obesity and lack of physical activity and lack of exercise increase your risk for breast cancer, but also hormone replacement therapy. Women's Health Initiative study many years ago showed that if you start a hormone replacement therapy program within 10 years of menopause, you will actually reduce the risk for breast cancer by 30%. Mm. So don't be scared of hormone replacement therapy. I'm surprised that even in this day and age, women are scared by the thought of estrogen causing breast cancer. Estrogen is present in all women. Estrogen is of different kinds. Estrogen metabolism can be studied. Your risk for developing breast cancer can be quantified, and we can help you lower your risk. And also, testosterone has been shown time and time again to reduce the risk for breast cancer. Dr. Rebecca Glazier has shown very clearly that using testosterone with an estrogen blocker in breast tissue prevents and stops the development and growth of breast cancer. And so using testosterone in high doses at an early age can actually prevent you from developing breast cancer. And Jerry has the numbers here, but, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do to lower your risk.
Okay.
And you shouldn't be afraid, right? Because a lot of women have heard of those myths or things passed down from their mothers or grandmothers, and medicine has changed.
Well, it used to be the dose of radiation in mammograms was much higher than it is today.
Yeah.
Because they used to have film, and you'd actually have to expose the film with the X-ray. And now they're using electronic sensors that will respond at much, much lower doses of radiation than the old film did. So mammograms today, you can probably get 8 or 10 mammograms today for the radiation exposure of one mammogram back, you know, 30, 40 years ago. So, A, the exposure of radiation with current mammograms, very, very low, okay, just because of improved sensors. The other thing, though, is that MRIs are incredibly precise. You can find tumors with an MRI much earlier than you could with a mammogram. The difference is in cost. Mammograms are cheap. We're just using some very basic equipment. The MRI is a multi-million dollar gizmo, and it requires a higher sensitivity of with reading, too. So you're going to probably spend 20 times more on the MRI than you would on the mammogram. And that's why insurance companies, of course, they're in the business of making a profit. And you make your profit by collecting premiums, not by paying claims. Right? It's just the real world.
Yeah.
And so if they want to stay in business, they want to do the least expensive study. They don't want to have to pay for advanced cancer therapy either. So it is cheaper for them to find a cancer early than late, but they would rather do it for, you know, a $50 mammogram than a $2,000 MRI. A couple of other things you were mentioning, thermograms.
Yeah.
Thermograms are touted as a radiation-free way of doing it, and they are. All you're doing is you're looking at the heat signature on the breast. And cancers, because they are growing rapidly, tend to have a lot of blood supply, and so that area of the breast gets hotter. But by the time you see a breast cancer on a thermogram, it's already got a very rich blood supply and is growing rapidly, and so I would prefer to find it much earlier with a MRI and or a mammogram than to wait for a thermogram. Some people are also doing confirmatory with high resolution sonograms. They, I don't think, are as good as the MRI. So I see. What else was there? You were there that I wanted to throw some things in while you were talking.
the ectomies. I don't know what those were.
Ectomies and otomies. Yeah. Okay.
Ectomies and otomies. But when they go in and take things out,
it's a biopsy.
A biopsy. Yeah. She was concerned about. But what, you know, you've got an open thing there. So I think
heard
a lot of myths.
Lesion. Yeah, you find a lesion. Yeah. And you put a needle in it, and you take a core sample out with the needle.
Yeah.
The question is, and the worry has been, that if you've got a needle track going in and you collect part of it and it is a cancer and now you're withdrawing the needle, are you pulling cancer cells along that needle track?
And
therefore, would you be spreading it? I understand it is clearly a theoretical consideration, but I've never seen it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, is it possible? Yes. Is it something that is reported often enough that it's an issue in medicine?
No.
No. Okay.
All right.
That's good.
Yeah.
So a lot of those myths debunked. It's important to know, to screen, and to find out where you are. That is probably the most important thing you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed, that is the most important. And then the last thing I'll say is the Galleri test about this. It's a blood test that does look for 50 different types of cancers. Mm-hmm. It does not replace your regular screening, but it is an enhancement to your regular screening. So if you are worried or there is a strong family history, then there's certainly something else that you can do.
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, we have no family history on my wife's side. Mm-hmm. My mother had breast cancer mm-hmm. and colon cancer. My father had prostate cancer and heart attacks and strokes.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm a genetic disaster waiting to happen. So given that family history, it behooves me to be as cautious as I reasonably can.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is why I'm going in for a total body MRI on the 19th of November.
Oh, you are doing
that's
it.
Right. We were talking about this last week.
That's right.
We were talking about it. I finally got it scheduled.
Nice.
It took a while because of the old shrapnel wounds, the old bullet holes and stuff. They were worried about, you know, metal here and there, but we finally convinced them to go ahead and do the study.
Okay.
I've also told my wife, if I'm going to do the study, you are too.
Two for one. Was there a BOGO?
They actually do a discount.
Oh, they do?
That is good.
They do a discount for the two of us. It's a couple of $100s, but yeah. I think we're paying mine alone was $2,600, and I think if we do a couple, you get $150 a piece off.
Oh, nice.
You know? Okay. So it's $26. It comes out to $2,450 each.
Okay.
That's a fair bit of money. It's still right up there in the range of
$5,000. It's a whole body MRI scan.
That's right.
Yes.
Start with the brain.
Me. Yeah.
You know, to look and make sure that I have a brain still at my advanced stage. Looking at my amygdala to see, you know, what my short-term memory processing probably is.
Yeah.
We're going to go on down, look at the thyroid. We'll be looking at my lungs, all of my old joints, and then the colon, the liver, the spleen, the stomach, the entire bowel, the pelvis, the prostate.
And the bones.
All of the bones.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a total body scan.
And then there's a review also in that price. Have somebody review it with you.
And you sit down and go over, region by region by region.
Yeah.
So, you know, at 77, I've had the Galleri test. My Galleri test was negative a few months ago.
Good.
So the statistical odds are in my favor. I don't have anything really bad.
Mm-hmm.
But this is kind of belt and suspenders. Having now checked my Galleri, we're going to do the total body MRI.
Yeah.
And see if there's anything there that the Galleri may have missed.
Yeah. And then if you do find something, Jerry, you know, a lot of times there are some minor abnormalities that are of no particular significance. Mm-hmm. But the point is that you want to find that when things are all good, rather than when there's an emergency and then you don't know whether this is a problem or not. But if you've had an MRI scan earlier that says, oh, this lesion was already present, it was mm-hmm. of not any significance, therefore in this emergency it's probably not a role player. And so for those reasons, I do believe in screening. firm believer of screenings of all kinds. So I think it's valuable. I'm glad you're getting it done.
When are you going to do yours?
Right after you. You booked your appointment. I will be booking mine.
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Mixon, since you need to maybe even do a
both
video.
Both of us can't be gone the same day.
That's right.
That's right. The 19th is in the middle of the week, I think. So we'll see.
You might need to do a video so that we can see kind of what, you know, not you, but somebody, get pieces and see. So what about the BRCA test? And maybe we can take a quick break here and talk about that. That has been popular and in the news. People have been talking about that, which can detect breast cancer.
And then we should talk about prevention a little bit.
Wonderful. Yes, we'll do that in just a moment. Also taking your calls. You've got a question about breast cancer or perhaps a diagnosis or something going on with you. Phone lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back. Stay right there.
I'm picking up vibrations. She's giving me excitations. I'm picking up vibrations. She's giving me
we've got some good vibrations going on today. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Jerry Mixon here. Dr. Samira Umat, my name is Lynette, and our phone lines are open for your questions about your health. 1-800-465-8770. Before we take that next call, we were talking about breast cancer and the BRCA gene. And how about some preventative measures, doctors?
Okay, well, first of all, let's talk about the BRCA's, one and two.
This
is a genetic defect that basically gives you a 99% chance of getting breast cancer in your lifetime. So this is the sort of thing that you see the celebrity who comes up to be positive and, you know, has both breasts removed even though she has no cancer as yet.
Okay.
Because she knows 99% of the time she will get breast cancer. That's fortunately, a small minority of the breast cancers in America. So, but yes, it happens. And people with that are BRAC positive, they're at higher risk also of pancreatic cancer and ovarian cancer and prostate cancers. And the men who get prostate cancers, because this is a genetic defect, men and women both can get it. Tend to get a very aggressive form of prostate cancer. So, you know, it is a good genetic screen to have done. And it does tend to go from parents to children. So, you know, if you have a father or uncle who died of an aggressive prostate cancer, or a mother, grandmother, aunt with aggressive breast cancer, you might want to go get yourself screened. It's a simple blood test.
Okay. And does your doctor do that?
Your doctor can draw the blood. He sends it to the lab.
They do the test. So you talk to your primary doctor about getting that done.
And then you should go into a genetic counselor.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What about prevention for breast cancer?
Stay skinny.
Okay.
Increased body fat increases every cancer known to man. Okay. If you are overweight, you are increasing your risk of breast cancer, colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, biliary cancer, liver cancers, ovarian cancers, uterine cancers. Every cancer increases as you get fatter. And not only do you get increased risk of getting a cancer, you increase your risk of dying of that cancer. Overweight people die of cancers that skinny people don't. The other thing is, you don't just want to be skinny, you want to exercise. Fat increases the incidence of cancer. It increases inflammation throughout your body, and it increases the virility of those cancers. Muscle does the opposite. The more muscle you've got and the more vigorously and frequently that muscle is exercised, working muscle puts out over 600 proteins that enhance your immune system. They help you to find and kill cancer cells, to prevent cancer cells, And for instance, a woman who is newly diagnosed with breast cancer, if all she does is go out and takes up a vigorous exercise program, she improves her survival from that cancer by 60%.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So you can prevent it by staying lean. You can prevent it by getting fit and exercising regularly.
Yeah.
Okay. You can prevent it by avoiding alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you were unlucky enough to get it despite all of these, your outcome would be much better. I had a patient once who was exactly like you said, lean, exercised a lot. Unfortunately, she did get a diagnosis, DCIS, caught very early. And she said to me, I was devastated when I heard that for her. You know, I was like, gosh, we did everything right. And yet here you are. And she goes, you know what? I'm not upset. I'm fine that I picked it up early, that I'm okay. I'm going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And she made a comment to me. She said that when she went to the doctor's office at the oncology department, she said she was the healthiest person there.
Yes.
She said, I was so glad to get out of there. Everybody there was so unhealthy.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's Dr. Mixon's fourth rule.
Yeah.
Okay. I have four rules of medicine. First rule, anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. There are downsides to every decision we make in medicine. The second rule, the proper dose of anything is just enough to do the job, because as you increase doses, you increase complications. Third rule, if you don't measure, you don't know, so you want to measure, 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 keep track of your progress or lack of same. And the fourth rule is one I hate, but it's one like your patient got. And the fourth rule is you can do everything right and things can still go to hell.
Yeah.
And that's just the way life works. Mm-hmm. But my favorite aphorism, shift the odds in your favor as far as you can and then relax and play the game.
Yeah.
Because you might still lose, but you'll lose a lot less often.
Right.
If the odds are in your favor.
That's right. That's right.
That's very good. All right. Yeah. Thank you, doctors. All right, we're going to take another phone call, headed to Spanaway this time, and I will give you the phone number because...
Lynette, I'm so sorry to interrupt you. Yes. Jerry, we forgot to talk about testosterone for breast cancer prevention.
Oh, my
goodness. So just two minutes, quickly,
2 minutes.
You bet. Complete that.
Hold on, Sandy.
Yeah, one of the things that people forget is that young women have 2 to 3 times more testosterone in their bloodstream than they have estrogen. Estrogen is a mitogen. It causes tissues to grow. That's why little girls develop breasts. They start with these flat chests, and as their estrogen levels rise, they start budding little tiny breast buds, and then they get bigger and bigger until they end up with adult breasts. The estrogen, on the one hand, is growing tissue, but in young women, they also peak their testosterone at about age 15. Okay. And that high testosterone is a very potent anti-cancer hormone. And so that robust testosterone with a much more modest estrogen, see, we think of estrogen in women, but they actually have a lot more testosterone than estrogen. And that high testosterone is suppressing the risk of breast cancer. So these little 18, 20-year-olds, unless they're a BRCA positive, they're not going to get breast cancer, okay? And they're protected by the testosterone. What we're now finding in recent studies is that if you give older women back their youthful testosterone, you dramatically suppress their risk of breast cancer. You can cut the risk of breast cancer, even if you don't give it to women until they're 54 years old in the last study that I saw. You had an 85% reduction in the risk of breast cancer over women that had no hormones at all.
Mm.
So, you know, estrogen alone will lower the risk of breast cancer. Synthetic progestogens raise the risk of breast cancer. Testosterone dramatically suppresses the risk of breast cancer. So I think every woman in her 30s should start having all of her hormones checked on a regular basis. And as her testosterone is declining, it should be replaced and kept at a nice, healthy level. And so should her estrogen and progesterone.
Mm.
All of her sex hormones, when she hits 50, should still be where they were at 30. Okay? And then her risk of breast cancer will be closer to a 30-year-old's than a 50-year-old's, which is what we've done with my wife. We started treating her at 30. She's now approaching 50. She's 58 years old, but or say 48 years old. Yeah. But she has the hormone balance of a young woman. She has the looks of a young woman. She moves like a young woman. She runs like the wind. She's lean and fit. She has less than a 23-inch waistline. You know, and her risk of breast cancer is close to zero. Why wouldn't we want that for every woman?
Yes.
Why do we wait till they develop a breast cancer and then we say, well, let's all treat it.
Yeah.
Let's all shave our heads in sympathy with their chemotherapy.
Yeah.
No, let's not let them get breast cancer in the first place.
Let's prevent it.
I agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for that, doctors. Going to the phones, Sandy, thank you for waiting. Calling from Spanaway.
Hello, Sandy.
Welcome.
Okay. Yeah, my question is about urinary tract infections. I keep having reoccurring urinary tract infections, and I do have a hard time emptying my bladder. What's the best? How do you totally get rid of the urinary tract infection?
Boy, if I can totally get rid of urinary tract infections in older women.
You would make 90% of those women so happy.
They'd be happy and I'd be famous.
Oh, yes.
They're poor and obscure.
Oh.
There's a lot of reasons older women get urinary tract infections. And it all stems from the fact that God is male. Because he designed a system, a plumbing system for women, that makes no sense whatsoever. This whole thing is absolute proof that God is male. Here's where it goes. You guys start off with a bladder that is attached to the front of the uterus. And you have a very short urethra. The opening from the bladder to the outside is only about a centimeter long. So you have a very short half-inch little tube there to drain your urine. Childbearing plays hobs with the entire reproductive tract. When that uterus grows from a little tiny thing, I don't know, about a third or a fourth the size of my big fist, to something big enough to hold an 8 or 9 pound baby, it has to grow enormously. It stretches all the tissues around it, including the bladder. Everything gets pulled out of place. And then after you deliver the baby, nothing goes back to where it exactly was. Everything now has been stretched out and sags and starts falling down by gravity. And so the bladder is no longer back where it was as a kid. It's kind of hanging down there, falling into the vagina. And you get little kinks in that short ureter, urethra. So that the bladder doesn't want to empty fully. Besides which, the muscles have all been stretched out. The pelvic muscles are all weak. And so that bladder has trouble emptying completely. And getting it so that it empties completely is important if you want to avoid infections. Because if you get a little bit of bacteria in there, it sits in that stagnant urine and grows. Hmm. And you never really totally flush it out.
Yeah.
And so there are some surgeries that you can do to pull the bladder back up into a more anatomical space, but that is a significant surgery, and most people don't want to have surgeries they don't have to have. And so they put up with what they've got after a childbearing. To further complicate things, the bladder or the urethra opens up right at the top of the opening to the vagina. We call it the introitus. And that introitus is only a few centimeters anterior to the rectum. And so you've got poop that's coming out there a little bit behind the vagina, and it is so easy to contaminate the vagina and hence the opening to the bladder with stool. And so E. coli are the most common infections because they're basically contaminants from the rectum. It's actually now getting bacteria growing into the bladder. And the vagina being a moist, mucus-producing organ is just designed to carry those bacteria forward to the bladder.
Mm.
So there are a few things we can do. I'm going to leave you with all the problems right now. Take this break, and then we're going to come back with solutions.
All right. You stay right there, Sandy. We want to talk about this. We'll take a quick break. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We have time for some more calls. Maybe you'll be one of them. Here's that number to get through, just like Sandy did. 1-800-465-8770. Let's talk about your health as you're aging and some of those problems you're starting to see with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Medicine, and I was hoping Dr. Umat would get up and start dancing to that
one.
You
know, it used to be easier on the old system. Yeah, this system is a little bit harder, so I decide to stay put. I have trouble with simple electronic things like my earbud, and I'm connected to my table now.
Well, that's true. So. You are connected, yeah. So we don't want that to happen.
But I stand.
You do. I know.
Periodically.
I
you
know.
Go back and forth.
I know. Okay. I will master it too one day, Jerry.
Well, that's just because... One of my old military wounds, uh-huh. You know, I was in a gunfight with a 50 cal.
Yeah.
And the guy, I was behind a log. He shot through the log. This log was about yay big around. That big armor-piercing round went through the log, skimmed down right over my back,
ooh,
a few millimeters above my back, and blew off about the half the right side of my ass.
Oh,
and so I'm missing a lot of muscle mass on that side. And that means if I sit too long, my right leg goes numb.
Yeah. Oh.
So periodically, I have to stand up.
Yeah.
So when you guys see me standing, it's not that I have an urge to dance.
You can do that too, you know. We wouldn't know.
That's right.
It's just that an old war wound is making my right leg go to sleep. And so I need to stand up and get the pressure
and
off.
And here
it.
We thought there you were we just go. Having fun with us.
That's right. Okay, Sandy, talking about those UTIs, we know what's going on. So what can be done, doctors?
We've described a lot of the problems, the solutions. The longest lasting solution is indeed a surgical repair to pull the bladder back up into a more anatomic position.
If it is prolapsed.
If it's prolapsing or even relaxing. It doesn't have to be totally prolapsed. Prolapse means it's actually come out through the vagina. That's a no-no.
Well, the degrees of prolapse, precisely. You don't want it all the way down, grade 4 or whatever.
No. But short of surgery, our biggest goal then becomes trying to strengthen the muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pelvic girdle muscles need to be exercised. And once more, this is a family show, so let me make this description as discreet as I reasonably can. There's actually machines you can use for this, a little probe that you can put in the vagina. It will tell you how much pressure you're putting, and you try to tighten all those pelvic muscles, and the probe will give you a numerical response. Simpler way is simply to have your husband or lover put a finger or two in the vagina and feel and have you try to tighten your stomach muscles, tighten your pelvic muscles as tight as you can, and hold that as long as you can and then relax it. And then tighten and hold it as long as you can and relax it. And the idea is to build the strength in those pelvic muscles, which will start holding things into a better position.
Mm.
Once you learn to contract those muscles, you don't need hubby's help anymore.
Mm.
Okay, you can do it on your own.
And there are physical therapists that will train you to do that pelvic floor tightening.
Yes. And they're called Kegels exercises, and they work reasonably well.
Mm-hmm.
So first, work on the muscles themselves. Secondarily, we have to try to clean up that pelvic floor.
Mm-hmm.
I've already described how mechanically you've got the opening from the bladder right at the top of the vagina. The vagina itself is moist and mucus producing. And then you've right behind that, you've got the rectum. And so you've got lots of bacteria coming from the bowel and it gets contaminated forward.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to do is you go to the drugstore, you buy a Providine iodine solution. It comes in a pint or a quart bottle, depending on the size that your store carries. and you add that to nice warm water, about one part iodine to four parts water, and now you've got a solution that's really good at killing bacteria. And you use that as a wash on your entire perineum. You start all the way forward, and you wash backwards. And you take a cloth, and you first you squirt the iodine solution, and then you rub backwards front to back, and you're moving everything away, and you're killing as many bacteria as you can. And you do that a couple of times a day. You do that in the morning. You do it in the evening so that you don't get too much bacterial overgrowth. And it helps if you can do it after you have a bowel movement. Anytime you produce stool, you are contaminating that whole area.
Yeah.
And so now you want to use the iodine wash to clean things off.
Yeah. And then it'll make a stain.
It does stain.
Because it has a yellow color.
Yep. Well.
Mustard.
Yeah. Mustard brownish.
Mustard brown. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And so, but that's okay. You now become a woman of color, and you can apply to the federal government for all sorts of perks and privileges. So
I don't get any perks or privileges.
Well, you
from
never
the federal.
Apply. You never apply.
I'm a woman of color.
So is my wife.
I just pay a lot of taxes.
You got it. Yeah, you know, my wife is Han Chinese, but my skin is darker than hers. So she's the woman of color, and I'm the dark one. What the hell? How come I'm not a man of color? You know. this whole skin color thing is just
iodine
stupid.
Solution.
Yeah, Provenine iodine. You pick it up at any drugstore. It's only a couple of bucks for a pint, and a pint will last you best part of a month. So, you know, $2 or $3 a month is a pretty cheap thing to pay, a lot better than a doctor visit. Does that help?
And then, Jerry, what about D-mannose, cranberry juice, hydration, D-mannose?
Yeah, well, D-mannose is a sugar you can buy online.
Yeah.
It's a sugar that we humans cannot metabolize. So when you take your D-mannose orally, it'll hit your bloodstream. Your body says, what the hell am I going to do with this? And dumps it out in your urine. And so your kidneys excrete it. And in the urine, these bacteria that tend to infect you have these little, we call them cilia. They're little hair-like structures that let them adhere and attach to the bladder wall. And the D-mannose, being sugar, gums up their little cilia so they can't attach to the bladder wall. So now when you pee, you wash them out more efficiently, which is really kind of nice. Doesn't kill them, but it just makes them slippery. They get on this little slippery slide, and they zip right out of you.
And
which
leave
is kind of
you.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yes. Hydration,
drink plenty of water, cranberry juice.
Yep. That's all of the pretty above. Much it.
But where do you get the D-mannose?
Oh, over the counter.
Yeah, it's over the counter. You order it through Amazon.
Or any health food store.
Not very expensive either. I know my mom used to get that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. And then for the antibiotic, when I do get the urinary tract infection, which is the best antibiotic?
Now, that depends on which bug is infecting you at the time. And for that, you go to the doctor, you tell him, doctor, would you please culture this urine?
Yeah, but, you know, they do that, but there is another one that they give over-the-counter, or actually, I think it's a prescription. It's called methenamine hippurate.
Yep.
And they do write for that, and that can be used for short periods of time as well. It's not as potent as some of the other antibiotics. But then if you're having recurrent infections and it's troubling you, then the best thing is what Dr. Mixon just mentioned. You go have a urinary culture done. Then they have sensitivities. And then they give you the exact antibiotic that you are sensitive to.
Right. But if you can cure this without an antibiotic, that's always preferable. Because the antibiotic is going to start killing the good bugs in your gut, too.
Yeah.
And we want those.
Yes, we like the gut microbiome. We like microbiome everywhere. Did you know we have a skin microbiome,
yes,
too?
I did.
Learning all these things. There's a skin microbiome. And then it makes sense. Yes, of course there's a skin microbiome.
Yep.
There's a whole new skincare line around the skin microbiome.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. Go to the drugstore and get all this stuff.
Yeah, let's
thank
hope
you.
It helps.
Have a wonderful day.
Yeah, good luck to you. Yeah.
Okay. We will be taking a break in just a moment. We have just enough time for one or two more calls if you didn't get your question answered. Or if you tried to get through last week and didn't make it through, here is your time to call in. 1-800-465-8770. Dr. Samira Umat here. Dr. Jerry Mixon. I'm Lynette. We will be back in just a moment. Stay right there.
Feel like a woman.
Hey! Woman.
You don't feel like a woman, Dr.
No,
Mixon?
I don't.
No, and you don't look like a woman.
I just think that we should have somebody do a meme on this song. You
know, oh.
Somebody with a deep bass voice singing, "Man, I feel like a woman."
Yeah.
Be very popular. I'm sure they would hit the top of the charts in no time at all.
Okay. All right, so doctors, we have just...
Yet, I'm a man who feels
you're a
like
man,
a woman.
But yeah, I still don't think you can carry that off, Dr. Mixon. All right, we have just a few minutes left of our show. And what would you like to discuss? What are some things that as we're aging, we are dealing with, and you are maybe perhaps finding some new ways to deal with that, or how are we dealing with it at longevity?
You know, I think one of the things that you are passionate about and you've been talking a lot about recently is senescent cell therapies and rapamycin.
I was just thinking the same things.
Yeah, we should mention that.
Well, you know, look at the clock. Okay, it's 9:46. We have time. The theories of aging. Why do we get old? Why do all these diseases of aging develop is a question that is hotly debated among physicians, and we come up with all these different ideas. And I think most of them have some validity. I think it's not one thing, it's a lot of stuff going on. But one of the key things that is causing us to fall apart as we age is the accumulation of senescent cells. Every cell in our body is designed to do its job for a specified period of time, and then that cell is supposed to die and get replaced by a new cell. But a small percentage of those cells hit the end of their lifespan, become dysfunctional, but won't die. They become our zombie cells, and they undergo a physiologic change in which they no longer carry out their assigned task, and instead they start secreting into the environment anti-growth, anti-healing, anti-repair, pro-inflammation, and pro-cancer formation cells, which are chemicals, which are really kind of spooky. Now, when we're young, we find those cells very quickly. They usually last less than a day once they form, and our immune system finds and kills them. But as we age, we are forming these cells at an increasing rate. We're making more and more of them, and our immune system is getting less and less good at finding and killing them, so that a senescent cell that in our youth would have been destroyed within a day will last for weeks, 2-3 weeks with an older immune system. And so the consequence is older people will have an order of magnitude more senescent cells than young people. And those senescent cells not only are not functioning well themselves, those chemicals they are secreting into the environment are inhibiting the growth and healing and repair of your healthy cells. And so what we now know with the animal studies, if we take elderly mice, that is 20-month-old mice, and mice live on average about 25 months. So 20-month-old mice are about the same as a 60-some-year-old human. We treat their senescent cells one time. We extend their health span and their lifespan by 36%. All of a sudden, these old, fragile mice start reproducing. They want to have sex. They run. They jump. They look younger. They act younger. And they live 36% longer. In humans, we are now doing more and more experiments in which we're reducing the senescent cell load of older people. And there are studies being done, one published a few months ago, showing that people with early Alzheimer's disease, in the course of just 6 months, actually start cleaning out some of the tau proteins in their brain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the study wasn't long enough to see a lot of improvement in their cognitive function, but if we can do that same thing for a period of years, because they didn't develop Alzheimer's in 6 months.
Right.
They developed it in 60 years.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, a 3-4 year study will probably show us a whole lot better results.
Absolutely, yeah.
We're doing these studies now with osteoporosis. We're doing it with frailties. And it's turning out that by getting rid of our senescent cells and keeping our senescent cell load low, we may be able to extend human health span and lifespan significantly.
Yeah.
Now, will we get that 36% increase that the mice have?
Mm-hmm.
That beats the hell out of me.
Mm.
But, you know, we already live close to 80 years.
Yeah.
So a 10% is an extra 8 years, 20% 16 years,
mm-hmm.
you know, 30% would be 24 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you can go from 80 to 104.
But the difference is, Jerry, is quality.
Yes.
And that's a big difference. You know, some people, actually it was recently somebody mentioned to me that medications today can be a blessing or a curse.
Absolutely.
They can increase your lifespan, but if you don't have quality of life,
and that's why we refer to health span.
Yeah.
How long can you be healthy?
Right.
And so health span is going to involve a whole lot of things. One,
yeah.
we want to give you back youthful hormone
right.
balance.
Yeah. Okay?
Because if you're 80 and you have the hormones of an 80-year-old, you're going to have a lot of troubles.
Yeah.
If you've got the hormones of a 25-year-old, you're a whole lot more robust.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm 77. I'm getting near 80. I have the hormone balance of a 25-year-old, which is why I make a lot more muscle and a lot less fat than other men my age.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the hormone balancing is important.
Yeah.
Eating sensibly is important. Exercising, making muscle, because muscle produces 600 proteins that heal and repair and balance your immune system and help kill cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, senescent cell treatments. I get my senescent cell treatments periodically.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, I just finished a three-day course of it last night.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Because I had not done a three-day course for a while. So
mm-hmm.
I'll do 2 3-day courses now. I do it again next week for 3 days. And then I probably won't need to for several months.
Mm.
But the fact is that, yes, senescent cells need to be treated. We need to get rid of those things that are trying to kill us.
Mm.
So it's two sides. On the one side, we want to add the things we need. We want to get rid of the things that are trying to destroy us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you need to go both ways at the same
That's
time.
That's right. But a few years ago, we didn't actually have these protocols.
No, we didn't.
These are reasonably new, and still many people don't know about it.
Most doctors don't know about it.
Yeah, and we got our protocols from the Mayo Clinic.
Well, yes, although
they published that.
Yeah, from their published research studies,
yeah.
yes. But we're also, now I'm looking at the Alzheimer's protocol,
yeah.
which uses lower doses, but for longer periods of
yeah,
time.
Yeah, you were saying. Yeah.
You know, so for people with cognitive issues, we may be making a few changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot we're doing at Longevity Medical Clinic that most clinics don't do.
Yeah.
You know, if as you age, if you're happy getting slow and fat and weak and losing your mind, fine. You don't need us. Go right ahead. You know, it's already happening. If, on the other hand, you want to avoid that, then you need to start with us a bit younger to avoid it completely. And if you want to try to reverse it to the degree that
yeah.
you can, then even though you're older, come see us and we'll do our best to reverse it. I didn't start on my therapy till I was 50.
Yeah.
You know, I'm now 77, so I've had 27 years of therapy.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I had started at 35 or 40, but what we're doing didn't exist when I was 35 or 40.
No, it didn't exist. And, you know, one of my patients, when she actually gave us a testimonial, and I hadn't heard her say that in the clinic, but I asked her, you know, what brought you to longevity? And she said that she and her husband had watched their parents age, and they decided that they did not want to age like that.
Yes.
And so they became patients, and they have, you know, been with me now for about a decade or so. And they're doing well. Yes, life brings problems. They manage it. They handle it. They are in a better position to deal with them. They are better off than their parents were at this age, for sure. And they're looking towards the next decade or so. But what they also did was, because their adult children were watching them, and they were watching how their adult children were falling into the pitfalls of, you know, adulthood, not enough money, a lot of stress, bringing up children. They actually are helping their adult children on our program now.
Yeah.
So they're supporting them.
A multi-generational program.
Yeah. but I think that's value, right?
Yes.
There is value because you have seen what it did to the generation before. You are seeing how you are better off than that generation. You're also watching the younger generation and saying, look, I'm in a position to help you today. What you don't understand, I think I know. Let me help you. And the younger generation said, yes, please. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and that's good.
Yeah.
You know? And of course, in my own family, my best example is my young wife.
Yeah.
You know, and when, you know, we got together, I was 58. She was 28.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm 77. She's 48 because discordance in our birthdays.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I wish I had been able to start the program when she, at her age.
But we didn't know it then. That's
right. We
didn't know
it, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't exist.
No.
So what I'm seeing with her is the joys of what happens when you can start someone at 30 and keep them on the program for the next 20 years.
Yeah. I think what a lot of people don't understand, and how we're different, Jerry, is that I've been here 14 years. And even in that time, it was in its infancy, but you started literally 14 years before that.
Yes.
So you were one of the pioneers. And so the point of that is that, you know, not every pioneer stays current. What we've done, though, is we've expanded, and you keep us current because it is important, and there is new developments. And now a lot of people are asking about this technology.
Yeah.
There's a lot more money going into the research, where in the past this was not of interest because we treated disease after it happened.
That's right. But our goal now is to prevent the disease.
Right.
Prevention far better than treatment.
Yeah.
Yes. And wouldn't you want to spend your money on getting better and feeling better than paying copays on this and that and surgeries and more medicine?
Yes.
I would think so. We need you to come into Longevity Medical Clinics. We want to see you succeed. We want to see you, what, Dr. Mixon?
Stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, happier.
Absolutely. And at Longevity Medical Clinics, we have three. There's got to be one near you. Tacoma, our new facility in Kirkland and in Linwood. You pick the day and the time that works best for you. Come on in. Let's see what life is doing to you so far and what we can do to help. We offer that free health analysis test, a blood test, and an in-body test that can let the doctors know exactly what's going to put you at risk down the road. Then we suggest you do the bigger blood panel. That is just a little under $600. It's $595, but that will let the doctors know so much more about hormones and things that you're at risk for, diabetes, a heart disease, sexual dysfunction, cancers, dementia, and so much more. Let's get you in, even if you're feeling great. We want to find out what we can do for you to make your life what, Dr. Mixon?
Better, stronger, yes, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier,
and happier. We're just going to keep saying that until you remember. Yes.
He remembers.
I know he does.
But yes, you know.
It's his mantra. He doesn't say, oh.
That's right.
Yes. Stronger, faster, leaner,
smarter, sexier.
Which makes you and everyone around you
happier.
Yes. Join us here at Longevity. Here is that number to call. Make your appointment. You can actually do that right now. That number is 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. You can even go to our website. And on our website, you'll see videos of Dr. Mixon, Dr. UMAT, find out all about us, what we're doing. And we even keep a whole list of our radio broadcasts. We call them podcasts. podcasts, and you can re-listen to a show or send it to your friend as well. We have so much information on our website, and you can also sign up for the health analysis. That is lmclinic.com. The website again is lmclinic.com. Have a great weekend and stay dry, stay cool. We will be here next month. Yes, November 2nd. November 2nd, we will be here. And get out there and vote. There you go. I said it. Yeah, very important to do. Have a great rest of your weekend. We'll be back next time on Leading Edge Medicine.